Welcome to the Authors Who Lead podcast. This podcast is dedicated to you, people who want to be inspired by authors, leaders, and the messages they share. This is such an important podcast to us because we help uncover what goes on behind the scenes when authors are writing their book. We talk about the process. We talk about where they get big ideas, and you can listen in on those conversations. We can't wait for you to join us, so let's get started. Hey everybody, Asul Taronis here. Welcome back to another episode. I'm thrilled to have a dear friend and fellow author, Ted Smith, here. He's a relationship and personal coach who has dedicated himself to helping people develop, maintain, and enjoy a happy and healthy relationship with themselves and others. He understands the challenges of unhealthy relationships and provides an example of hope, strength, and transformation. In his book, he talks about the journey that he went through navigating an unhealthy relationship, and how you, maybe perhaps in your relationships, can learn from him to heal and transform. In his book, which we'll be discussing today, Healthy Me, Happy We, Transforming Relationships with Yourself and Others, we dive deep into that transformation. And let's welcome the show. Ted, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. You know, I'm brought back to almost a year ago when we first connected and started to talk about, hey, so I think I have a book idea in me.
Yep.
And I don't know exactly where to begin. Usually that's this conversation starts with people that come to me and they're not even sure what to expect from my conversation. But those of you listening who might be thinking, gosh, I'd like to write a book. That's where Ted was just several months ago. Let's take everyone there for a second before we dive into the topic of your book, which I think is such a raw, vulnerable testament to your transformation and to the ones you want to help others with. Where were you when you said, I think I want to write a book? And what was that feeling like in that early stages?
Yeah. Honestly, a year ago, right now, it was really just a sprinkle of an idea. I had a few ideas of concepts that I wanted to talk about in the book, but I had no idea what it would look like in terms of the amount of story about myself that I would share, or the mix of kind of memoir versus instruction and guidance that I ended up providing. I really didn't know what it would look like. I just knew that I wanted to help people. I had reached the conclusion by that point that helping people through relationship challenges was something that I was put on this earth to do. And I really just wanted to find a way to manifest that. And I realized within 5 minutes of talking to you, that you could help me do that. And yeah.
Yeah. It's when you talked about just an inkling of an idea, that little seed of maybe I could do this. A lot of us out there, we kind of get the nudge, maybe I should write a book, or even maybe somebody else has told us maybe we should write a book. But there takes a little bit of courage to then take the next step, which is, well, what can I do now? Do I read a book? Do I take a course? How do I do this? Not a lot of us know other authors, so we wouldn't even know who to ask. Like, we know we've heard of them. We even listen to interviews about them, but we don't always know what's the first step. For you, what did you walk away with when you started to get clarity about your message? Because some people think that it all happens in one instance. Like, oh, I know exactly what my book is. Tell us, for those of us listening, where did it begin? Like, what was your seed of your idea and where did it go to? As you said, you weren't sure exactly what path to have. Where did it kind of go from the beginning towards the end?
Yeah. So in working with you, actually, I found that what really helped me was engaging the right side of my brain. I tend to lean towards the left side, the very analytical portion, the side that, you know, makes lists. And, you know, I was a math major in college and, you know, I have a corporate job now and I'm just very analysis oriented. And what I found with help from your coaching was engaging that creative side of me, let things kind of flow through. And I ended up, I did the visual mapping that you have your authors do, and to kind of draw out the different concepts that they may end up being in the book, they may not, but giving it a visual component. And I'd found so much fun in that exercise of like busting out my colored pencils that I hadn't used since I was in high school. I did some drawings and stuff back in the day. I don't consider myself a wonderful artist, but I feel like I'm fairly good at it. And to kind of re-engage my creative side was, first of all, a lot of fun. But second of all, there were things that came out of me in emotions and ideas that I didn't necessarily know were there. And that's something that we can do by engaging that right side of our brain.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, what's difficult about writing a book is that there's no certainty in the beginning. I think being a very left brain person, there was a little bit of that. I want to know for sure this is going to work, that you can help me, that this is a good idea or not a good idea. And asking you to be uncertain was a little bit of a challenge for you.
Oh, yeah. I'm still very much on the growth path of being okay with uncertainty, accepting that things are uncertain. And that actually relates to my story of, you know, of what led to the book is a lot of fear around uncertainty and trying to, you know, building kind of a coping mechanism for myself where I tried to plan out all future outcomes so that I knew how I could react to those situations. But also related to the book, you know, I have always prided myself on being an excellent student. And I viewed this as kind of a project, like a really, really lengthy research paper that, you know, I would enjoy writing those in school, because I honestly, part of it is I enjoyed the accolades from teachers and professors who, you know, reviewed my work. And so to me, it wasn't an option that the book wasn't going to happen because I had committed myself to doing it. But there definitely was a lot of uncertainty about right. what it would look like and how successful it would be and all that good stuff.
Great. Let's dive in actually to the topic of your book a little bit here. So Healthy Me, Happy We didn't start with that notion in mind. In fact, your book launched to a 2-year anniversary of one of the lowest moments in your life.
Yep.
Let's go back to the core message of your book and why it was so important for you to write this.
Yeah. The core message of my book is that cultivating a healthy relationship with yourself allows you to have healthy, happy relationships with other people. A lot of us, myself included, have a tendency to put other people first without caring for and loving ourselves. We, you know, I think it's thankfully becoming more mainstream and more commonplace for messages of self-care and loving yourself, the importance of that. But, you know, what I had always learned or thought or felt was putting, like, it's proper to put other people first and loving ourselves first seems selfish. But what I've learned is that there's a big difference between selfish and self-loving. Mm. So that's the point I want to drive home through my book. You know, it covers topics of unhealthy relationships with other people and abuse and addiction and things like that. But it also talks about how unhealthy our relationships with ourselves can be and how the way we interact with our own thoughts and feelings and the way we relate to ourselves is a direct reflection of how we relate to other people.
Right. We talked about this early on when you're trying to decide to write this book. When you write a book that's so personal about a challenging relationship, it can be difficult to know how much do you put yourself out there. You know, you're still, like you said, working a corporate job, a traditional job, and you know, you are growing into the work you're doing as a coach to help others in relationships. When you talk about some of these moments in your book about the person you were 2 years ago and then the decade before as well, not everyone who's in an unhealthy relationship actually knows they're in one. They know they're not happy or they don't feel the joy that they think they should feel, but they become so common that this is just what life is. Like, aren't relationships hard? I think is one way you describe it in the book. Like, aren't they supposed to be hard? And part of that was you didn't even notice that you were in a bad relationship. Talk about that a little bit. And what were the signs and what were the first steps you took, as you describe your book, to get yourself sort of into the next phase of like finding this healthy part of you?
Yeah, I definitely was in that place. And actually, you know, the people, I would love for my book to reach everyone, but my true core target audience that I would absolutely love to reach are, you know, the Ted Smiths of 10 years ago, who, like you said, just they're in an abusive situation, a toxic situation, and they don't know it yet. So my journey was that I was in a 15-year abusive relationship with a narcissistic alcoholic. And it took me 15 full years to realize that A, he was an alcoholic, and B, that the situation was emotionally abusive. I knew that I was unhappy, and I knew that he was, you know, quote unquote, kind of a jerk to me from time to time. But I didn't realize just how bad it was, because it had evolved over time. It wasn't that bad to start with. And when things slowly evolve like that, we lose sight of that perspective that we can have on the situation of our own lives. And so finally, 2 years ago, like you said, 2 years ago from my book launch, actually, I hit rock bottom when he ended up in the hospital in the ICU going through alcohol withdrawal. And shortly thereafter, I learned all about narcissism and emotional abuse. And once I hit that point, like, that's when I even learned about what a healthy relationship with myself was. It just was a completely foreign concept to me, because my entire life was focused on another person. It was, you know, how can I make him happy so that therefore I can be happy? I didn't have the concept that, you know, the happiness starts with myself first, and that enmeshment and codependency that we experienced together didn't allow me to have a healthy relationship with myself. So hitting that rock bottom in a horrific situation that I wouldn't wish on anybody allowed me to kind of have that reset that I needed and start. It really helped me realize, like, I need help. I can't do this anymore. And so that's when I started going to Al-Anon and started therapy, and things just started to get better and better from there.
Right. You know, you describe oftentimes like that it was a slower sort of process. It didn't start out all that bad. There might have been signs, maybe, but truthfully, a lot of people get in relationships not because they're bad. Like, oh, here's a bad relationship, let me get in one. People usually get in them because they're pretty good. They're like, there's a connection of some sort. But sort of like if you dip a frog in boiling water, it'll leap out. But if you put them in lukewarm water and let it slowly rise, they don't even know that it's getting hot, right? So looking back at your younger self, were there signs that things were going astray earlier you didn't notice? What were those signs? Because maybe, and I know you talk about it in your book, so I'm sort of prompting you, but what were some of those signs, and how did you now look back and go, how did I not notice those?
How much time you got?
We got plenty of time, so you tell us.
Right,
all you want.
Right. I know. Yeah, I cover a lot of those in my book. I would say, you know, some of the earliest signs were noticing that he could do no wrong. What was interesting is that for the first several years of our relationship, you know, I viewed him in a way that I couldn't live without him. And so really, in my eyes, he could do no wrong. And then about 5 years in, there was an energetic shift in kind of the quote unquote hierarchy of our relationship, where I started to realize that he couldn't live without me. And at that point, I did start to recognize that he could do wrong. He just wouldn't ever admit that he was wrong. So I think, you know, one of those earliest signs is, you know, recognizing that, you know, I wasn't in a relationship with another human who's, you know, fallible, but someone who I perceived to be perfect and to be a shining example of what it's like to be not only a human, but to be a partner in a relationship as well, even though all my bodily sensations said otherwise. I wasn't listening to my gut.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it's listening to our gut. So when you had the turning point and you started to heal, it wasn't too much longer after that we met. So you were pretty fresh on the road of recovery from being in an abusive relationship and also being out of relationship in your own kind of world, navigating the life that now you're in charge of more than you, maybe you always were and you just didn't realize it. But what were the points in the book as you were writing it that you started to have some maybe ahas? Because I always encourage people to remember that the book is for them first. It's for to serve them. What were some of those aha moments for you during the process of writing?
Yeah, one thing that comes to mind, probably the biggest one, is last year in the process of me writing a book I had entered into a relationship for about 10 months with a wonderful man that I consider to be my first experience with a healthy relationship with another individual. And, you know, so many aspects of that relationship were great. It was leaps and bounds different from what I experienced for 15 years. but about 3 months into the writing process and that sort of thing, I started to recognize things in that relationship that weren't working for me. It wasn't a good fit anymore. We weren't a good energetic match. And I actually remember having a conversation with you along the way of, you know, my challenges in the situation and how I basically needed to take my own advice, read my book to myself, because there were concepts in there about, you know, trusting my gut and, you know, not being able to tolerate certain things or, you know, boundaries that needed to be set, that showed me quite plainly, instinctively, that, you know, that relationship was no longer serving me anymore either.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, you're not the first and certainly not won't be the last of the authors who said, I should just listen to myself, because the thing that I was writing about was happening and I couldn't even see it even in the writing of this. I was like, well, that's not surprising. I know it feels like, but that's the beauty of a book though, is that you don't have to start to now think it in your head. You could go look and read and go, yep, here I am, like right on the page, like classic. I could be a case study for my own book.
Yep.
And that's the remarkable part. So, you know, you went from somebody, you know, who basically had a lot of trust in a relationship to kind of being in an abusive relationship that kind of grow over time and, you know, creating this codependent lifestyle to finding more healing for yourself. What are some of those healing practices that you have found that have been most helpful as you're transitioning to this person you're trying to kind of nurture and love that maybe you hadn't in the past?
Yeah, I would say therapy is the biggest source of that. I mention it maybe 27 times in my book about how I believe that therapy is good for everybody, not just those going through, you know, significant emotional and mental illness or turmoil, but that it's good for anybody, even those who are in a good place, to kind of get that third party feedback. Because like you said, when you're in the thick of an issue, you may not have that perspective that you need to see your situation with a different set of eyes. So therapy is definitely a big one. I also worked a lot with an organization called Gay Man Thriving, who provide coaching services to gay men, which they have been just an absolute delight to work with. And I believe that they, in working with them, you know, my transformation happened so quickly because of the work I did with them. I feel like a completely different person, even a year after ending that relationship, but now it's 2 years and I feel like I'm on a rocket ship into space with how much momentum I have with creating this new life for myself. So therapy and coaching are two big things. And then, you know, self-care, which we hear things about self-care. And I think there's maybe some misconception out there. You know, self-care doesn't just include spa days, like, you know, treat yourself,
right,
do a massage and that sort of thing. But it's other stuff like meditation and exercise, eating well, doing things to nurture ourselves, because we don't, like going back to what I said about before, is we often don't put ourselves first and we need to do that in order to show up fully for other people. We've got to love ourselves first.
Right. You know, one of the things that's really interesting that you described, which is this idea of not even understanding maybe what happiness really is anymore.
Yeah.
If you lost touch of that word, you knew you weren't happy. You weren't even certain about what happiness really meant. How would you define happiness now? Because obviously on the other side, maybe not where you want to be, but how would you describe the happy feeling that you have come to notice now?
Yeah. Going back a little bit to what you just said, that I knew I was unhappy, but I was doing my darndest to convince myself that I was happy. I experienced moments of happiness and pleasure, but they very quickly went away, usually because of some interaction with my ex-husband, where, you know, in the flash of an eye, you know, that happiness would just kind of fizzle. So now it's, I remember a few months after leaving him, I was out for a run. And I just had this moment of presence and peace. And I may have even said out loud, I know I thought it, I'm like, wow, is this what happiness is like? Like, this is really cool. Who knew? And that's kind of what related to how I put that in the book is a lot of us just don't know what happiness feels like. I had never experienced that level of joy before. It was a foreign concept to me to be able to cultivate that for myself and not have it, you know, rely on having to have other people provide that to me. It's hard to explain. It's just, it's beyond satisfaction with the current state of things and just being really excited to live life.
Yeah. You describe in your book about what it's like to be in a relationship with a narcissist and how they're really just self-loathing people. But some of the signs of the abusive arguments were things like they start to dismiss you, like that you're just oversensitive or your feelings are exaggerated or, you know, shutting down the discussion and putting it on you, or as you describe, gaslighting sort of the conversation. Were there signs that other people tried to warn you about, like your friends, your family, like, hey, I think, you know, you need to, or were you isolating yourself further and further away from people who were trying to point out these things? Because a lot of times people in relationships don't even hear the signs from people who are telling them. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I would say people didn't directly say, hey, he's being a jerk to you. The way I got clue, and I don't have any resentment or blame for that, because I've experienced myself that when you're in a friendship with someone and you notice things about their romantic relationship that you want to point out, it can be really challenging to navigate that and still maintain your level of friendship and trust with that person. So there is no ill will whatsoever towards my friends for not pointing out the things that I knew they saw. You know, once I left him, they definitely said, yeah, we noticed some things.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're seeing those signs and that people started pointing out, were you distancing yourself from the people that might have actually stepped in? Like, did you know there were some people that were probably going to be more aware, even though maybe consciously you weren't trying to keep people at arm's length?
Yeah, I would say I didn't experience distance with anybody because it's hard to answer that question. It wasn't because they brought up observations with how he interacted with me, but there were friendships where his relationship with them was damaged because of the way he treated them. And that would relate to how I often had to play, or felt I had to play, middleman between our mutual friends and my ex-husband to kind of referee or keep the peace. And there were a handful of extreme situations where the friendship ended up going away altogether because they just couldn't handle being around him anymore. And, you know, I'm still in the process of trying to repair those friendships. They certainly will never be the same as what they once were, but now that he's been removed from the equation, there's at least the opportunity to have those conversations.
Yeah. You spent some vulnerable time talking about your physical relationship and the difficult parts of this. A lot of times authors ask me, I don't know where the line is about how much they should put in this book. And often I will tell them, what would the person you're trying to reach need to hear?
Yeah.
You made some good and some challenging choices in what you would put in this book. Tell us about those challenging choices and why did you choose to put them there?
What I found in my work in relating to other codependents, other folks who are recovering from abuse or currently experiencing abuse, is that there's a lot of value in sharing stories that people can relate to. That actually is what allowed me to wake up. Mm-hmm. A couple months after my rock bottom, I came across a blog post written by a woman who lived with her narcissistic ex-husband. And the article that she wrote, you know, kind of recounted her experience of what that was like day in and day out. And that was really my first experience. I never really knew. I just thought a narcissist was somebody who was self-absorbed. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that I knew that describes my ex-husband. Absolutely. What I didn't know was everything else that came with that. And so I read this article and I'm like, holy crap, I am reading about my life. And she created a Facebook support group for people living with narcissist emotional abuse. And so I joined that, and post after post after post, I could not believe the similarities. 90% of the posts that I would read are like, oh my God, like I had no idea that people related to me this almost exactly. And so that is exactly why I decided to go into so vulnerable of detail, is because yes, it's extreme, but I know that there are elements of my story that people who are in abusive situations and may not realize they're in abusive situations can relate to.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes your book so accessible to people. We had this conversation early on, like, yes, I'm a gay man. I was in a, you know, and married to a man, and my relationship has that focus, but this is for anybody in one of those relationships that just feels like stuck, not able to be happy, but not even knowing what to do or if there is anything to do. The idea that maybe relationships are just hard and you're going to be unhappy sometimes. And that feels normal in some regards, because if you talk long enough to people, they'll talk about, oh yeah, my relationship too. You're like, okay, well, I guess it's just normal. But to the extent that you don't know how deep the pain or suffering might be, is one of the reasons you wrote this book. You wanted people not to suffer, maybe as long as you did, or even at all, if they're lucky.
Right. I think we need to be really careful about the common phrase that people say of relationships are hard work, because that's just something that people say. And for the longest time, for 15 years, I thought what I was going through was normal because relationships are quote unquote hard work. And I want people to understand, to help them understand, is they take reasonable effort to, you know, interact with someone so closely, but it should not be painful or something you dread day in and day out. The other point I wanted to make is that I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. One of the things that I thought of is what you just said, which is, if you're listening out there and your relationship seems like a lot of work and you're often less happy than are happy, relationships aren't supposed to be like that. If you think they are, somehow you've convinced yourself or let other people convince yourself, you might want to read this book, because your relationship shouldn't feel hard and shouldn't be difficult. And if you go, well, my mom and dad said, oh, then that might be the even more sign that you should find out some help.
Exactly.
Actually, relationship with others is the relationship with yourself. If it's hard to love yourself, then that's another sign you probably need a book like this, because loving yourself shouldn't be hard either.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's exactly what attracted me to a relationship with someone who was abusive, is how abusive I was toward myself. I grew up very perfectionistic. And although when I was ready to come out to family, I was in a pretty good place at that point, the 3 or 4 years, and actually more than that, of coming to grips with my sexuality, there was a lot of strife and heartache and pain and shame that came up during that process of kind of beating myself up for who I was. And although by the time I met my ex, I had gotten to a better place with myself as far as my sexuality, those lingering kind of self-imposed traumas of abuse had kind of created a relationship with myself that then attracted a 15-year abusive relationship with somebody else.
Yeah. Well, I just want to have that, because I think that's the thing that really stood out to me, is I don't wake up every day thinking my relationship's hard or difficult. And then I was like, wow, what if you did? And you think it's normal? That would be really hard, because usually relationships are pretty private. At least that's what I've observed. People don't talk about things in their relationship, whether it be their physical relationship or the things that are tender, finances, abuse, things like that. They're hard to talk about in general. So I appreciate that you're bringing that to the attention of the reader. Well, let's talk about the journey of writing, becoming an author. And one of the first exercises I make my authors do is write out somewhere and say out loud that I'm an author. And that moment you committed to this journey, that you became an author, what was the biggest hurdle to overcome?
It's a good question. I do remember when you first asked me and others to write down, I am an author, I felt this sense of, holy crap, here we go. Like, you know, excitement about the journey. I think the biggest obstacle was probably getting out of my own head, overthinking the process. That tends to be something to this day that I still am working on overcoming, that kind of the left side of, you know, the brain, the very analytical mind, and kind of opening up my heart to the process and just like letting those juices flow.
Yeah. And what would you say if you could go back to the beginning to help yourself in this process? What advice would you have for your earlier version of yourself? Because it wasn't long ago. I mean, your book just came out. Probably saying, you know, I'm an author is still strange. I don't know that ever becomes much different than that feeling of, I can't believe it, I'm an author. What advice would you give your earlier self in the journey of writing a book?
I think I would just say, trust the process and know that challenges are inevitable and to keep going.
That's great. I think because of schooling, us educators didn't do the best job of making people feel like authors. We did a really good job of teaching people what they need to do to get a grade on a paper, or how to pass the test, or how to set up a thesis statement and prove it. But no one prepares you for what it feels like to sit down and say, okay, what do you really think? That's a hard thing. It shouldn't be hard, but we were never trained to say just really what you really think about something that's important to you. And it takes a while to settle in that, okay, so I can have my own voice here and say what I want. And like, that's it. That's it. So there's a little bit of that sort of reckoning with our upbringing about what writing is. So will you write more books, Dad? Was this like a bucket list thing? I'm done. I'm really excited. I got this off my chest and I got to say the thing I've been wanting to say for so many years. Or does the author bug still live in you?
The author bug still lives in me. There's nothing down on paper yet, but I have ideas for a whole series of books, actually. Definitely an idea for the most immediate next one, if you want to call it a sequel. But I'm still like, I'm feeling all that out. So no guarantees, but I do know that I'm on a journey of making sure that helping people is at the forefront of what I do day in and day out.
That's great. And I think that's a testament to your healing and your journey for making this book first about you, but being about you is really about others. That's the thing that I learned from your book, because there is no separation of me and you. There is no separation of us and them. There is only this we. And I think your book's a great, it's interesting to read. I mean, it's engaging. Even if you weren't in an abusive relationship, you find moments of aha. And you also start to have such a great empathy for anybody you've noticed or maybe you judge harshly who are in a relationship like this, because it allows you to see behind the scenes of what it was like for the person that's suffering. And maybe even for the person who was the abuser or the narcissist, not to just negate what they've done, but to have an understanding that there's no changing them. You need to get out for your own sake. That's up to them.
Yep.
Thank you so much for writing such a true book, such an honest book, a book that I think is going to help lots of people. In fact, from the reviews I've read, it already is. What's been the biggest joy from being able to hold your book in your hand and realize you're an author? What's come of that? What's like been the benefit of the thing that is actually shifting in your world as you've taken on this role of author?
In addition to the sense of accomplishment, because I'm very accomplishment driven, I would say the most impactful part for me is to start getting feedback from my readers, some who know my story, some who don't necessarily know what I've been through, and to understand how it impacted them, how they can relate to the story, how it hit them, how it struck them, what they learned, that sort of thing. It's all about the reader for me.
Yeah, fantastic. I want all of you who can relate to what you've heard to go to wherever you find books, your bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and get Healthy Me, Happy We, The Transforming Relationship with Yourself and Others. It's a great book by Ted Smith. Thank you so much, dear friend, for being here and sharing your truth and being so willing to share the process of what goes on behind the scenes with authors just like you.
Thank you, my friend. It's great to be here.
Thank you for listening again to another episode of Authors Who Lead. We appreciate you being here, and we hope you subscribe so you get this delivered to your device every week. And if you haven't left us a review, please do so. It really helps. And if you have a book in your heart, you've been wanting to write a book, please go to authorswholead.com and join us on this journey of becoming a published author.